Thank you so much for viewing session four of year two of the Iowa Public Health Leadership Academy. This is the last session that will take place over the spring and summer. This session will cover fiscal management for boards of health and supervisors in Iowa. We have two perspectives that will make up today's session, one from a community health consultant and one from a local public health administrator. If you are a new participant, we recommend viewing content from year one to supplement your experience. You can view last year's sessions and sessions one through three from this year by accessing the Iowa Public Health Leadership Academy website at iowaphla.com. The year one sessions are also available as audio podcast files for your convenience. Before I turn it over to the speakers, a few comments about the session. The resources mentioned in today's presentation are all linked under the Academy website for your convenience. These are available under Curriculum, then Year 2, and then Session 4. Today, we'll provide you with information regarding fiscal management in Iowa, as I mentioned earlier. The learning goals further define what you'll gain from this session and include describing some basic concepts of fiscal management, identifying key elements related to fiscal management, and providing examples of resources to monitor fiscal performance. You'll now hear from Bernadette Davis, a community health consultant from the Iowa Department of Public Health.
Today, we have the pleasure of having Bernadette Davis, Region 5 Regional Community Health Consultant, and Roxanne Smith, Louisa County Public Health Administrator, to share about fiscal management. So with that, I will turn it over to Bernadette.
Thanks, Becky. Welcome, everyone. I first want to qualify in the fact that I am not an accountant. I am not a financial professional in any capacity. I'm not a finance guru per se. But what I'm going to share today are some very basic concepts that I've learned as over the years of being a director myself of a public health agency, as well as an executive director of some hospital departments, and also helping to do the finances for my late husband's business. So with that caveat, the objectives for today's meeting are to describe some basic elements of fiscal management and basic concepts. And that's what it is, basic concepts that we're going to provide. And identify some key elements that if you know these key elements, you're going to be able to quickly monitor, budget, plan for your fiscal operations. And finally, we're going to provide some really great examples and some resources of fiscal performance, but monitoring your fiscal performance. So why is fiscal management even important? Well, at some point in our life, we each plan for something big. Maybe it's to purchase a new car, or maybe it is to provide for our child's college education. Maybe it's that we want to open up our own business. It could be that we want to purchase a new house and or that we're moving into a new house. Could be that we want to travel. For me, it's that I'm planning my retirement. Regardless of what that big adventure is, we all have the skills, education, and support and time, but you also have to have money to make those things happen. A mentor of mine always said, no money, no mission. And he's right. If you don't have money, you have no mission. And even if you are a governmental agency or a not-for-profit, you still have to have the capacity of money in order to execute your mission. So when someone says, well, you're a not-for-profit, you're not supposed to make money. True, it's not our intent to make money, but you have to have some type of financial revenue to support the mission that you want. But along with finances for your mission, finances also demonstrate the overall performance of your agency. It tells them how well you are doing and if you're even sustainable. And I think we saw that this past year with COVID and the fact that many, many businesses weren't able to sustain themselves and so therefore they had to close. But along with overall performance, finances also provide for planning. And in planning, we have short-term plans, day-to-day operations, paying salaries, paying the bills, rent, utilities, paying for supplies. But we also have long-term plans for our finances. Maybe we've outgrown our building and we need a new building. Maybe through our community health needs assessment, we've identified that there's an aspect of health that we really need to address. And so we need to plan for that and plan for those finances. And then, of course, there's the unexpected plans that we didn't plan at all, like COVID, that we are paying overtime or needing to update our computer system or enhance our operations through interpreters in order to accomplish our mission. All three of those are part of the planning process. But along with performance and planning, we also have to be accountable to the money for which we are being provided. You can't spend more, or at least you shouldn't spend more than what you're bringing in. And definitely, I would disadvise you paying, robbing Peter to pay Paul, because most of the time, Paul doesn't get paid back. And I think we've all done that inadvertently through maybe our own personal situations. Oh, I borrow a little bit of money from this account, and I'll promise to pay it back, and it doesn't happen. So definitely don't rob Peter to pay Paul. But then the last part of this with finances is that you have to be knowledgeable. You have to know what's your income versus your expenditures. What are those big things on the horizon? And if there are some big things that you didn't plan for, who are you going to talk to about making sure you have enough money to cover those unexpected things that occur? So with that, a wise friend once told me, one is only as knowledgeable as the information you get. And this is definitely a two-way street. Information flows back and forth between the Board of Health and agency staff. As an agency staff, it is your responsibility to make sure that your Board of Health, as the governing body, or if you have a board, a trustees for the hospital, that they know what is going on. I've been to many meetings in which the agency staff will provide the information. We're doing well in finances. We had an okay month. Well, we're a little behind on revenue. What does all that mean? Those are all vague terms. And as a Board of Health, I would say, explain that. What do you mean a little? Are you meaning $1,000? You mean $10,000? What are you talking about? Or we're doing well. What does that mean? That we have a positive margin, or that we're our money, we're in the black? What does that mean? So vague terms don't help the Board of Health. The Board of Health, on the flip side, also need to be asking. If you're not getting that information as a Board of Health member, ask. Provide that information. And to be perfectly honest, I strongly encourage agencies to provide financial data to the governing body. By just verbally giving them information, that kind of leaves them in the dark. And so you really need to be providing those details. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm not asking you to provide such intimate details that the Board of Health becomes micromanagers. Not at all. The Board of Health is not to micromanage. They hired very competent staff, and a director, finance coordinator, other staff, program staff. The Board of Health is not to micromanage. They need to trust their people that they have to review and monitor those finances and not micromanage. So who actually influences versus manages? Well, financial influence can occur in many different ways. It could be through third-party insurance. It could be from clients. It could be from grants. But most definitely, in a majority of counties in the state of Iowa, the Board of Supervisors influences finances. I'm going to qualify this again. The Board of Supervisors is not to be telling you how to use your finances, but they provide county dollars towards your financial situation. Who manages that? That's a different story. That becomes your governing board, your administrator, your agency staff, and even subcontractors. If you have a subcontract with another entity to provide services and or a product, they are the ones who need to decide how to use those resources the most effectively to deliver what you are asking them to deliver. Again, then you're not to micromanage that. But management of finances comes through the governing body and staff. Influence comes through third parties and or other entities. So let's talk a little bit about the Board of Supervisors' role, just to be clear. The Board of Supervisors is to establish a total dollar amount. That's the key. Total dollar amount of county tax money to be appropriated to the Board of Health for public health services in a fiscal year. And they do that because they are legally obligated to inform their county constituents, me, county taxpayer, how much money is being obligated out of our county budget this year for services. That's their legal responsibility. They're not to tell you how to do it, but they are to tell you that they're going to do it. Okay, so how do they determine the county tax allocation? Well, there's several ways. Number one, it could be that they set through a contract or a subcontract a negotiated dollar amount. You often see this with organizations such as hospitals, in which the Board of Health may subcontract with hospitals to deliver those public health services. In turn, the county sets a specific dollar amount for that. Can't go over, you can go under. They can't definitely go over without amending that contract. Another way of doing it is through a balance forward. We have a few, not a lot, but a few counties generate their own revenue, have their own expense. And the difference between that is the amount of money that they operate on. And then that money is carried forward into the next year. It's kind of like your own personal accounts. Whatever you bring in, whatever you expend in your checkbook is what you have to operate off of. But a majority of counties in the state of Iowa do what's called deficit funding. And deficit funding is derived through a very simple process of what is planned for revenue and what is planned for expenses. So I'm going to use this example throughout today. As an agency, you may plan your revenue for the fiscal year to be $400,000. You may plan your expenses to be $500,000. The difference between the two is $100,000, and that's the county tax allocation or the deficit that is being funded. The key here to keep in mind, it is planned or budgeted. It's not what you actually do. This is what is planned. And again, this is the amount of money that the supervisors plan to tell the county residents how much they're going to be obligating for public health. So what's the Board of Health's role in all of this? Well, the Board of Health has a different perspective in the fact that they provide for general oversight in agency operations, including fiscal. They're going to be the ones that set line item budgets for revenue and expenditures. And that could be for salaries or service. It could be for donations, space, overhead supplies. The Board of Health is also the one who employs staff to manage those agency operations. Over the last year, many agencies have incurred maybe some crosshairs between the supervisors and or the Board of Health and who is actually employing people and what their salaries are going to be. Again, keep in mind that the Board of Health determines salaries and that line item, not the Board of Supervisors. And then finally, the Board of Health may decide that they want to subcontract, that there's an entity available within their community to subcontract those services, and they then decide who and how much and how what that's going to be and what deliverables are going to be available for that. Bottom line, when you begin fiscal management, you always begin with a strategic plan. From there, you move on to your goals. What is it that we want to accomplish? Do you have the finances and or resources, both in human terms and in money, to accomplish those goals? And then you budget for that. We do this every day. It's nothing glorious and a big plan. But sometimes people get scared by the word of a strategic plan. Let's apply this to my own personal life or any of your personal lives. Let's say I decide I want to buy a house. I want to buy it in a very, 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 very nice neighborhood. My goal is to have that house accomplished in the next couple of years by the end of 2022. And in order to do that, I'm going to need probably $200,000, $250,000 to do that. So I budget my savings and or I budget and through a mortgage how I'm going to do that. Now, keep in mind, things occur that may change that, your goals. The strategic plan is still to have a house, but my goal changes because now my resources may have changed and the fact that the housing market is outrageous. And that house that I thought I was gonna buy for $250,000 is now $450,000. So that would change then. And when that changes, you also have to change your scope of budgeting and or potentially your goals. So let's talk about budgeting a little bit. Sometimes people get scared about budgets. We budget every single day. We budget to go on vacation. We budget for kids' school supplies. We budget for groceries. Although if you're like me, I don't really look. I just put them on a list and then go buy them. But in some respects, I might be budgeting when I pick a name brand over a common, unnamed brand. Inadvertently, I might be budgeting in my head. A budget is nothing more than a plan. How much you plan to receive and how much you plan to spend. But you also have to keep in mind that a budget also has to build in some unexpected. Now, I'm not telling you to pad your budget. And I'm not telling you to put extra fat in your budget, but I am, as a director, saying it's a good idea to have a little bit of that in your budget, because you never know what's going to happen. If you put in an extra 50 hours for an hourly worker, that's because you might end up with some overtime for an unexpected event. Or maybe you put in for that extra computer, or for a new, to budget for an upgrade on a fleet vehicle. That's okay to have some of that built in for the unexpected. But the other thing, when you're doing with a budget, you also need to compare it against your historical trends. For example, you've been having the same line item for $2,000 every year, and you haven't used it for the last 3 years. Why have it? Put that $2,000 in a different line item and get rid of that particular line item. Maybe it's for magazines and your office is no longer providing magazines. Something like that needs to be taken out and look where you're actually using your money. A budget with historical trends in mind. Also, budget against actual data. If you start seeing that one particular line item keeps going higher and higher and higher, start budgeting for that against your actual data. Maybe the use of a telephone, a landline, is no longer an objective. Maybe you need to go to cell phones. So again, look at what you're actually doing and monitor that. And then allow for adequate time to prepare. Don't plan on doing a budget 2 days before it's due. You need the time to look at what you have over the last 1 to 2 years and prepare accordingly. And then I'm going to tell you whether people do it or not. Most time it goes by the wayside. Don't deviate away from your budget unless it's absolutely necessary. This past year with COVID was an absolutely necessary that you deviated away from your budget. But the minute you begin deviating away from your budget and you start robbing Peter to pay Paul, you're going to end up into trouble. So try to stay as close to your budget as you can. And then ask questions. I can't emphasize this enough. As an agency director or administrator, if you're not sure where your fiscal person is coming up with some numbers, you need to ask. Same way with a board of health. If you're not sure how some numbers are coming into play, you need to ask. There's nothing wrong with asking a question. There's a lot wrong with not asking the question and then getting caught with your pants down because you can't answer it when a board of health asks you. So the next slide is actually an example of a quick and dirty budget comparison worksheet that I have created. And some of my counties use it, some don't, not a problem. This will be available to other counties if they so desire. I'm gonna be providing it to the regional consultants. So if it's something you're interested in, they will be able to help you with it. But it quickly shows how much you planned or budgeted for your expense, how much you budgeted for your revenue, and what your county tax dollars are. And each month, you could quickly identify, well, this is what I plan to spend, but this is what we actually spend. Was I under or over? And this is what I plan to bring in for revenue. This is what we actually brought in for revenue. Am I under or over? And then at the bottom, you can see the differences. Wow, this month was a good month. We were in the black. Ooh, this month was not such a good month. We're in the red. The overall analysis on the far right-hand side is a quick way to see, are we on target with the amount of money that we plan to use for our county? And if those numbers don't align up with your county allocation, then you need to be taking a deeper dive into the specifics of your budget. So let's talk about the next step, and that would be cost. You have to know the cost of what it is costing you to provide a service or to build a product, because if you don't, you have no way to know if you're on track. And once you determine the cost of a product, then you can charge for that product. Now, some things you're obviously not going to charge for, but there are some things such as home care services or vaccinations that are not covered by the department that you might want to charge for. And then you need to know, are you going to make a little money or losing money? It serves you no purpose to send a staff nurse out for a home care visit and lose hundreds of dollars every time you send her out the door. You need to know what that cost is. That also helps you to determine the success of your product and the continuation. Great example, in home care, it got to be too cost prohibitive for one of my agencies. Their cost was well over $250. They're really only able to charge about $160. The next year it got up to over $300. Continuation of a home care service for them wasn't in their future. They can't keep charging, you can't charge over $300 for something like that. So the way to find out your costs is to do a cost report where you actually identify all of your costs. And a cost report, people start to panic, oh my goodness, it's a great big elaborate thing. No, a cost report doesn't have to be anything elaborate. And I'm going to show you why. I'm going to call it my ham sandwich analogy. And trust me, everyone in my region has heard me talk about my ham sandwich. I'm going to try to find out the cost of ham sandwich. I'm working as a music booster in our concession stand. So we're going to make ham sandwiches to sell. Bread, ham, cheese, mustard. I don't have the workforce because, like most of us, we're volunteers in our concession stands. But the cost of that ham sandwich is going to cost me $3. You can apply the same principle in a quick and dirty fashion to a program. Let's say we're going to be administering shingles vaccine. We're going to have the cost of the vaccine, a syringe, Band-Aid, alcohol, gloves. But we're also going to have the workforce to administer that vaccine and to report those findings. That particular cost might be $42 or $42.25. Again, a cost report is going to provide for some of those additional things that you don't typically figure: overhead expenses of rent, utilities, those type of things. But the quick and dirty of what you actually can physically see and use at least gives you a baseline. So once you've established your cost, now you could go into determining what is a good fee to charge. Again, it might not be as simple and cut and dry as, oh, it cost me $3, I'm going to set my fee at this. You also have to look at your market area. Great example, the price of gas here in Mount Pleasant is grossly different than the price of gas in Des Moines. We are definitely cheaper than we are in Des Moines. On the same hand, we're not a large city, but our gas is also cheaper than it is in a small town of New London. So you have to look at your market area and see what is a reasonable expectation for a charge. And then you also have to expect and actually kind of demand that billing for the product occurs with regularity. I will bet each one of you can tell me of a situation in which you went and had a service done or you bought something and they said, oh, they'll bill me later. And the bill shows up 4 or 5 months later and you're looking at it going, wait, what is this? What happened? I don't remember this. Did I really charge this on my credit card? You have to bill with regularity because it enhances your cash flow, which then enhances your ability to provide those services. And the number one thing I'm going to tell you is never, ever, ever set your fees less than what it costs you to produce them. Unless you really are planning to give something away, never set your fees less than that. Now, in some cases you might, because it's a nickel or a dime difference. But for anything more than that, really look at your fees and set them accordingly. Finally, the hard part to realize is if it costs you more than what you're able to charge and it's becoming unreasonable, that might be a product or a service that you need to truly evaluate whether you continue doing or not. And if you're not the ones doing it, is there someone else in your area who can do it? And if there isn't someone else in your area who could do it, then that's a tough conversation to have with your Board of Health and say, look, we're losing money on this, but I think it's important for us to continue. Okay, so let's go back to my ham sandwich analogy of now we're going to charge. My ham sandwich cost me $3, but I'm going to charge $4. So that way I make a little bit of money and I get to continue service. Same way with your program. Set your charge high enough. Cost me $42.25. We're going to charge $45. Now, that doesn't mean that somebody's going to pay you that. Keep in mind, there are, if you look at with services, you might charge something for a home care service, but you have accepted a contractual adjustment. So with that in mind, make sure that your charge is high enough that when you account for that contractual adjustment, you're at least at your cost, that you're not below that. Once you have your cost and your charge, the next thing is that you're going to be doing is going to be fiscal monitoring. I cannot emphasize enough, you need to monitor, monitor, monitor. The one thing that gets agencies into trouble is somebody thinks that somebody else is watching the monitoring or watching the books, somebody else is paying attention, and nobody's paying attention, and it ends up catching up with you. It is important that you can quickly identify what is your revenue, what are your expenses, do you have steady billing? As a director, it's not necessarily your responsibility to do the actual billing, but you need to make sure that it is getting done. that you have a steady cash flow. And if you don't have a steady cash flow, what's going on? Is it something that you can't help? Maybe it was related to COVID. Maybe it's a third party vendor is starting up and hasn't got their act together and haven't figured out how to send you the money. The other important piece is you need to know how much money is out on your books. I'm going to ask each of you right now in your mind, do you know how much money is out on your books? If you can't quickly come up with that in your head, I'm going to challenge you at the end of this presentation to go ask the question. How much money is actually sitting out on our books that we haven't collected yet? And why haven't we collected that? Could be a very reasonable explanation. You know, they haven't had a chance to pay the bill, or it could be that somebody's missing paying their bill. You also need to know, what are your funders? Who are your funders, and how much are they paying? Do you have a contractual adjustment with a particular funder? Is there a reason why someone isn't paying their bill on a regular basis? And then finally, you need to know, is our agency in the red? Are we losing money consistently? Or are we in the black? Again, I'm not saying that, remember, no money, no mission. I'm not saying that agencies don't operate with in the red, but you also have to be able to plan for some, a little bit of profit so that the county asking that you have doesn't lead you into coming back and asking for more money later. I'm going to show you just a few examples of some tools that you can use or look at. I am a visual person. I love finance. I love the data. I can look at a spreadsheet and see the numbers, but unless I put it into a visual, sometimes it doesn't make an impression on me. So getting numbers from my biller was great, but putting them into a visual really helped me to see, okay, where is things really standing? And this is a quick and dirty example of where revenue might be. Client fees, federal funds, state money. This is a quick way to look and say, hey, a majority of our money is coming from county tax dollars, or a majority of our money is coming from third-party vendors. That helps you to determine, is that a service that we're going to continue? What happens if that third-party vendor dries up? We kind of incurred that a few years ago when the department or when the state went to MCOs. Same thing with expenses. Where is the majority of our expenses coming from? 70 to 80% of expenses in an agency are related to salaries, benefits, and insurance. Benefits of insurance, FICA, IPERS, 70 to 80%. In this particular graph, if you look at the next greatest expenditure other than those is medical supplies. You look at your overall agency operations, very little of your money is really going in that direction. Another quick and dirty way is to say, okay, how much is out on our books? Putting that amount of money. We've collected 70%. We haven't collected 30%. Is 30% an acceptable amount to have out on our books? Maybe you want to say, no, our acceptable amount is 20%. We need to be stepping it up. What's going on here? Maybe if you're out on your books at 50%, you definitely want to be having a conversation of what's going on. And you can break down individual things such as salaries or benefits or operations into any type of pie graph on your own, just so you can quick see what it is. In this particular one, you can see 74% of this particular agency's expenses within relationship to salaries. And when you're talking about steady billing, these next graphs demonstrate what you can expect or should expect. The first one is the ideal. That rarely happens. The ideal is when you bill, which is the red line, you collect, which is the green line. Keeping in mind that when you collect, you're often collecting a month to 2 months behind what you're billing. But when you post it in a graph, you can see the comparison. So graph number one is a true picture. Again, like rare that ever happens. You're more likely going to see what is happening in graph number two. There's a parallel connection. When you bill, you receive. A parallel connection in those two. When you go on to the next slide, you're going to see a couple of examples of what I call horror stories, of which I actually lived. In the first graph, we were billing okay, and then that started to separate, and the gap got wider and wider and wider. And the rationale behind why it got wider was because when my biller got a denial, maybe she needed to fix the number, or the date was wrong, or there was an inadvertent letter in somebody's name. She was taking that denial and putting it in her desk. She wasn't going back and fixing it. I once had someone tell me that Blue Cross and Blue Shield, for every 10 claims, they automatically discount one of them. They didn't even bother to open it. And I believe that. I really do believe that. So when someone, they're hoping you're not going to rebill. They're hoping you're not going to check on why something was denied. I'm going to tell you, please, please, please go back. And if somebody doesn't pay something, bill them again, whether it be a client, a funder, an organization. Make sure you bill them again and then keep track of why someone isn't paying you. Why the green bar graduated and went across the red line to the top is because we did some hard looks and hard investigation to rebuild and collected that money. In graph number 4, this could be an issue of two things. One, you are not steadily billing, or two, you're not steadily collecting. When you start out with billing one amount and you're collecting another, most likely it's from a previous year. So in July, you may receive more revenue because that's coming in from May and June. But when the lines start intersecting, when the green lines and red lines jump across one another and intersect like this, that's often an indication that either your biller isn't billing timely. They're not billing monthly. They bill whenever they feel like it. They're not billing by the 10th of the month. And it may be that they're not by their fault of theirs. They're not getting the data. Maybe your staff isn't putting in their timesheets or putting in the bills or whatever it is. That could be one reason. Or it could be that your funders aren't routinely paying you. That could be, like I said, when we start out with some new MCOs, they didn't have their act together. And so maybe that was part of it. Once they get their act together, though, again, there should be a steady parallel occurring. If there's not, ask questions. What's going on? So in the next slide, these are just a couple of examples of, if you don't prefer graphs in that capacity, you can do some tables. What's your revenue billed? What's your revenue received? What's the red? And the red, again, might not always be a true reflection. It might be that you have a contractual adjustment, and so you want to expect that. But in the bar graph, if I were looking at this bar graph and I'd known, wait a second, I know I've got some people that I'm billing Blue Cross Blue Shield for. Why don't I have any money back from them? That takes a deeper dive. I guess that's the ultimate thing, is you need to do a little bit deeper dive on something that does not look right. If somebody's not paying you, ask the questions. Why aren't they paying us? We're billing them. Why aren't we paying us? And don't look the other way. What I'm going to do now is actually show you a couple of what I call it a trick. I don't know if it's necessarily a trick, but 4 data points that you absolutely have to know. 4 data points. If you know these 4 data points, disregard the graphs at all. If you know this information, you're going to be on top of your finances. First one is budgeted revenue. Second is budgeted expense. Third is actual revenue. And 4th is actual expense. If you know budgeted revenue, budgeted expense, actual revenue, and actual expense, you'll be able to track your finances with much greater ease. So let's start. I'm going to do a table here. We're going to use our actual example. So we've got revenue and expense. We're going to start with budgeted. So in budgeted, the dollar amount, we're going to use the example from before, we budgeted $400,000. We expended $500,000. The difference between the two is $100,000. Now we're going to go back into the same graph, and we're going to put in what we actually did. Our actual revenue for the year was $375,000. Our actual expense was $460,000. The difference is $85,000. So now we're going to do a comparison. When you compare, the county planned to provide to us $100,000, but we really only needed $85,000. That's actually good news in some respects. We were $15,000 under what our county allocation was. And as most of you know, that money goes back to the general fund. And you can do it through the difference, or you can actually even do it through budgeted minus actual. Your budgeted revenue of $400,000 minus your actual provides you the difference of $25,000. And then if you do the same thing with the expense, you're going to end up with $40,000. 25 minus 40 is $15,000. 2 ways to skin the same cat. Revenue minus expense equals the difference. Budget minus actual equals the difference. 2 formulas. So let's do an example now, which it may not turn out quite as well. Revenue expense. What'd you budget? We're going to use that same $400,000, $500,000 in expense, $100,000 for county tax dollars. But this year, when we actually apply the numbers, our actual revenue was $300,000. Hmm. Our actual expense was $500,000, $25,000. We now have a use of $225,000 we have to make up. When you go and do that comparison, $100,000 minus $225,000 is $125,000. We're going to have to go back to our Board of Health and or Board of Supervisors and say, we're going to need more money. And that very well could have happened this year because of COVID, without question. So being in the red with a needing a difference in an amendment is not necessarily a bad thing. When you do, though, look at it through the revenue lens, $400,000 minus $300,000 is $100,000. What happened in our actual amount? Why didn't we generate that revenue? Again, using COVID, it could be because you couldn't deliver the services. Our expenditures were more because we had to pay overtime. So we had an extra $25,000. When you put it all together and look at that, $100,000 minus $25,000 is $125,000 that we were over. So it's not necessarily a bad thing, but in a normal year without COVID, this would not be the ideal. You do not want to spend more than you had, and you definitely want to investigate why your revenue is lower than what you projected and why your expenses were more than what you projected. Couple of simple tools. Bottom line of the formulas, revenue minus expense equals the difference. Budgeted minus actual equals the difference. If you know those four elements, budgeted revenue, budgeted expense, actual revenue, actual expense, you can apply those to the spreadsheets that you get or the workbooks that you get from your county auditor. Find those four numbers, plug them in, and you're going to be able to tell right away where you're at. So with that, are there any questions?
For a year that, say, for instance, you know, with COVID, a lot of us were behind budget and had some deficit. And now going forward, there's a lot of funding coming in. When you have a surplus of funding, which doesn't happen very often in public health, what are your best, I guess, tactics or advice that you give to local public health or that you've experienced in the past of what to do with that funding?
Utilize the funding, without question, utilize the funding, but also do that long-term planning. If you add staff or if you add future programming, look ahead as to how you're going to sustain that. It's kind of like a grant. You can definitely add that grant money in, but how are you going to sustain that in the long term? And making sure that you have some other revenue source to take its place. I strongly discourage taking what I call taking, that's not the right word, acquiring large amounts of funds and not putting an expense behind it. That just kills off your staff. If you get money, then you need to supply the staff to support that funding as well. I've also seen agencies that, oh yeah, we're gonna get extra money and try to do the work with the staff they have, and they end up killing off staff and you end up having staff leave your service. And then in a couple of years, you can't even sustain that. So definitely put the staff with it that you need, but plan for some other way to sustain that funding. And if it doesn't look reasonable to do that, be upfront and transparent and say, this isn't going to be here in a couple of years. We may not be able to fund that with staffing, and look to how you can transition that staff out of that position.
Thank you.
Not a great scenario, any way you cut it. Getting extra money is not always a blessing.
If you don't already have it, here's Burdette's contact information, and it was in the slides that was sent out earlier. And moving on, we will turn our presentation over to Roxanne Smith.
Good morning. So my part, Burdette gave excellent information. My part is to kind of bundle it up and show you how things can go wrong if you don't heed Burdette's financial advice, and then give you some tools and ideas of what you can do to try to fix it. So a little background about myself. I was hired here as a staff nurse in 2009. I did both home health and public health nursing. And then in 2016, I unexpectedly became the interim administrator. Our finances and the trouble we were in caused that to drag out. But 2 years after being interim administrator, I was officially appointed as full-time administrator here. So our financial troubles were caused by a fundamental lack of understanding of budgets, in my opinion. Once I had been here and kind of had the time to go back, the problem was created before me, but then I got to deal with the aftermath of what happens when finances aren't handled properly. So I don't believe that the people running our finances really had a fundamental understanding of how to run a budget. They didn't understand what Burdette just talked to you about, budgets versus actual expenses. And how to know how to present those to the Board of Health in, or whatever board you may present to, and know the true difference between them. It caused, whether on purpose or by accident, a lack of transparency with the Board of Health. And the board was not receiving the correct information. I also believe our board at the time probably was not asking the right questions of the people in charge of finances here. When you put all of those together, and unfortunately, combine that with creative finances for some personal gain, I walked into a storm of lawsuits, loss of trust and rapport, and terminated employees. Some of you have probably heard, kind of headline news, our Board of Health and our Board of Supervisors were in a lawsuit. Long story short, the lawsuit started over raises for staff. I am not going to argue that they weren't deserved, that they weren't needed. I think a lot of times public health staff are underpaid. The problem was in the way it was presented. It was justified based off of finances that were not correct. And that's really the crux of the problem. So we were knee deep in a lawsuit when I took over in 2016. And then it was my job to kind of figure out where to go from there. So I had to first calm the storm. It took a very long time. And it took willingness to work hard, to work together as a team, be transparent, and think outside the box. And we couldn't be afraid of change. A lot of change had to happen. It needed to happen quickly, but it could not. Keep that in mind. If you're in a boat where things aren't great, it can be done, but it will take you some time. There was a lot of distrust between our department and both boards. I was fighting an uphill battle to gain back that trust and rapport with our Board of Health. At this point, it was a brand new Board of Health. And our Board of Supervisors. I leaned heavily on our office manager. In my opinion, your biller, your office manager, whoever does that for you is worth their weight in gold. Finding a biller, I think a lot of the times boards in general, I don't care what kind of boards that are setting salaries, don't understand how very specific the job of biller is and how very important it is to your agency to get in that revenue. Like Burdette was talking about earlier, I have something sitting here to deposit that I think we billed 2 years ago, but it takes the termination of that biller and the knowledge and know-how to constantly keep up with the changes that these payers are coming up with, or the claims are throwing on the floor, like Burdette talked about. It takes a really good biller to understand, to work with them, and to not give up on some of these claims. So I also took some tools from Burdette, and you'll see those here in a little bit. And we created interventions that would help us track and keep track of where we're at, some of the things she just talked about, and knowing what we've billed, what we've brought in, knowing the difference and where it's at. We did implement some of those. And most importantly for us was segregation of duties. It was not happening here in our agency. And we had the same person billing, receiving, and depositing money. That same person also was doing all of the claims and receiving the mail and producing the reports that went to the Board of Health. So that right there, if it's happening, I would really encourage you to segregate duties. I know that a lot of you are small, we're small, but I'm telling you it can be done. If you have two staff, you can segregate duties because that's pretty much how it's done here in my office and it works. But don't allow for crimes of opportunity if you can help it. Create a checks and balances, implement monthly spreadsheets like Burdette's showing you. It can be done. All right, so this is just an example of what our office manager and myself came up with for our monthly billing spreadsheet. If you're one who's not into graphs, this one's perfect for you. I like it because I can quickly find every month and go back. We save each fiscal year in one file. And if billing comes in right now, I may go back to FY20. And I have recently to find where we've billed and plug in where we received the money. So I worked with our office manager to create this. We use it as both a place to track billing and revenue, as well as to segregate duties. Our office manager will bill and deposit. So I know this might be small for you, and I apologize. I made it as big as I could, but she, on the left-hand side, you'll see the different, we do home health here. So you're going to see the MCOs, the VA, some billers, payer sources on that side. Under the places you can't see, that would be the actual patient that the service was for. She will go in under the charges. So you'll see HCA charges, homemaker charges, skilled nursing charges. She will bill every month and plug in what she has billed to that payer source for that patient. And then you'll see the total that's due. Same thing on the other side. This is all a real just long. This is for April. This is a true screenshot of our actual April, where it was at when we created this. So the second side is just underneath that, because it includes all of our payer sources. Okay. And then at the bottom, I'm able to go in and do the deposit. So when I go and do a deposit, say it was billed in April. So I say I'm doing this deposit in June, but it was billed in April. So then I receive the money. She billed it. I receive it. I deposit it. So then I go back and do the actual paid. So for homemaker, it generally is and home care aid, you're going to usually receive the same that you billed. Skilled nursing, you will not. You'll receive a difference. So what we received is going to be less than what was billed. This will automatically do the assurance adjustment for us and then show the outstanding balance if there is one. So it's a quick way where my biller can go back and see all zeros. If there's not all zeros, who didn't pay, why, and why are we not receiving that money? Okay, so then on the bottom, if I was crediting it to April, I'd put it in there, but then I'm actually going to go back to the bottom of this same spreadsheet, but in June, say I was receiving it in June, and this is where I go in and plug in the money that's come in. So I'll put in where it came from, what it was for, when it was deposited, what line item it went to, how much was paid, and the date and the check number, which will match wherever you go back and find it from the billing. And then at the bottom of this, you're going to see a nice little neat total that is everything that we received for that month. That total should match what you are getting from your auditor for your monthly reports. That's something else that we started doing. I don't have that put into the slide I actually could probably show you. I'm sitting right here. So they look like this. I get them from our auditor every month, an expenditure and a revenue. When I look at the bottom of this total deposit, it should match to the penny what I received from that auditor. If it doesn't, there's a problem. So it's kind of another checks and balances there for us. This was a tool created by Burdett, and I think it is probably hands down the handiest tool I have to present to the board every month. There's both the revenue side, and then we'll show you the expenditure on the next slide. But in this, on the left-hand center where the colored numbers are, that is the quick place where my Board of Health can look every month at actual versus budgeted revenue and expenditure. So we can look down and see exactly how much we brought in, exactly what we've spent, and then this formulates for us where we're at. So if you look at this, for looks like this one was done in May for us, our county planned to fund 335 some odd thousand. So this does the math for me between that budgeted and that actual expense, and shows it's in the red, not because I'm over, but because I'm still $181,000 under the county tax dollars that my Board of Health said, that Board of Supervisors said that we could spend of tax dollars for our agency. So it's just a quick way for them to look every month and see where it's coming from. The other nice thing I like about this, because we are home health, it gives this little chart, the home health versus public health revenue. Those of you who are certified, I know a lot of people, as Burdett alluded to, it hasn't been cost effective to have home health. And there's numerous reasons for that, but people are decertifying. This is actually skewed for me because of COVID. On a normal year, my blue home care revenue is usually closer to 75%. So it's easy for my board to quickly look when they're saying, hey, is home health cost effective for our public health department? 75% of our revenue is generated from home health. Yep, we're doing okay. Other agencies, if it's coming from the public health side, and there's very little home health revenue, that's maybe a starting point of a conversation of why, where is it coming from? Why isn't it coming in and what's happening? So this is the revenue side. And then the next slide will show the expenditure. This expenditure would match what you saw on the other slide to do that formula. But all of these categories basically are line items for us. So we plug in where we're at, what we've spent in each line item, and they exactly match the line items from our auditor's report from before. So what we'll do is I do the claims here in my office. My office manager goes through the auditor report and double checks the claims to make sure they're correct. That's maybe a step farther than people do, but it has, on a rare occasion, we have found mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes. We've found claims and checks cut to and attributed to the wrong line item. And we've even found some attributed to the wrong department. They weren't ours at all. So by doing this every month, I'm able to go to the Board of Health every month and say, this is a true cost for this program, this department, everything that we're doing here, and know that everything lines up with all the other numbers in the rest of the county. It's also a way, like if you look at this and come down to grants, there was $0 expended. I don't have those grants anymore. So that flags me that next year we can probably pull that line item out because we're not receiving that grant anymore. So that is how we do that. This is just something quick I do. It's basically all the same information that goes into this spreadsheet. And these are true costs for our department. This also matches those auditor reports. So when it says percent remaining for our expenditures and our revenues, that is exactly to the decimal what the auditor's report says. It's just another way for my Board of Health to look, go across, oh, yep, we're on track, we're where we should be, and present exactly what each month was so they can compare month to month. I do the same thing for our environmental health department. We do contract that out, those services out, but because I'm responsible to report the finances for the public health service, I have another one that's yellow on top that says environmental health. And then they can also see month to month, a quick rundown of where that department is with their finances. This next slide is just so I can show you guys, transparency has been key in rebuilding rapport for us. It, like I said, it's taken a long time. We're about 5 years in now and we're there. We took a long time, it was slow, but this is another thing that I did to add in some transparency. So we all do annual reports for our agency. This is just to show you how I take a screenshot of basically that monthly graph that I from Burdette that I present to the Board of Health, and we literally plug it into our annual report. So it goes to also the Board of Supervisors and the public, so they can see exactly how their tax dollars are being used from year to year. So like I said, we're about 5 years in and we're in a good place, and I like to think the storm has passed. We've built a good working relationship up with both our Board of Health and Board of Supervisors, and the trust did eventually return. But like I said, it did not happen overnight. It took time. But it happens. Implementing these tools and changing how you do things takes a lot of work and time, but once they're in place, they make the daily lives of your staff actually easier. And a lot of people probably look at all these graphs and be like, oh, there's no way. We don't have the staff. We don't have the time. We can't do this. Really, the opposite is true. These tools already exist. And like Burdette said, she'll be sharing these with you guys. But by working together with whoever your financial person may be, plugging these in and using them on a daily basis makes it so easy. My prep time for my Board of Health meetings is diminished greatly just because these are already ready to go. I print them out, I put them in the packet, and they're done by the time the meeting rolls around. And I also understand that not all administrators do as much of the fiscal process as I do, and that is okay. However it works for you is okay, but I cannot stress enough to ask questions. If you aren't the person doing this, ask questions. Know what you're presenting is accurate. Do the numbers add up? Do they make sense? Can you answer their questions that are coming from the Board of Health? It's very important to know that that's one of the problems that happened here is the person presenting it was not the person creating it. And that person had no idea they were not right. The Board of Health didn't know they weren't right. I'm not sure the person running them knew they weren't right. Ask questions. And that's a good check that if it doesn't make sense and you start asking questions, then you might all find out, even if it was inadvertent, that something's off. And for the boards of health out there, the people overseeing the agency, if you're not sure, ask questions. I know Burdette said the same thing, ask questions. I think that wasn't happening here. If it doesn't make sense, if you don't understand it, your administrator or director should be able to explain it. And if they can't, there might be a problem. So avoid the storm, ask the questions. And boards of health ultimately know that you're responsible to your taxpayers on how those dollars are used.
All right. Well, thank you very much. So at this time, we'll open it up for questions for either Burdette or Roxanne, or if there's others who'd like to share a story about finance, please feel free to do that. Type it in the chat or come unmute.
I see a question as to who will those spreadsheets be available to. The spreadsheets are the different tools that I have. I will make available to the CHGs to provide Roxanne her spreadsheets. I imagine she would probably also make those available to Becky, who could send those out. As regards to those intimacy of that and looking at those, Roxanne will need to, or Roxanne would be the contact person to explain her spreadsheets a little bit further in depth and utilize those. Roxanne has some great spreadsheets that are more in depth that if you're wanting to use, that would be the connection with her and or her Bill or Brandy.
Yeah, I'd be happy to explain those if somebody wants to give me a call and explain those, and we could send a blank one out to anybody who's interested. Obviously you'd have to tweak it, add in the programs you actually bill. And if you're not home health, then it'd look a lot different, but it works really well. And I'm a firm believer in it. I also print that out every month, just the deposit thing. I forgot to mention that. I print the bottom out that's deposited. It goes in my deposit binder and then it stays with my stuff. So if the Board of Health wants to ask some questions from months past, I can literally bring it out and find all the deposits for the entire year. It's pretty handy.
Okay, great. Last call for questions.
I might provide an example, one final example before we leave of a, for lack of a better word, a horror story of a situation that occurred. And it wasn't within public health, but it was actually within environmental health. And some of you may or may not have seen this through the state auditor's report. It is a public document. You can go to the state auditor's website and see the document in which the environmental health officer of Henry County was falsely submitting claims to be paid for staff that did not exist, for supplies, for travel. She was going to conferences that were simultaneously in one in California and one in New York, same time frame, simultaneously. As it turned out, if you would go in and you read the report, there was a huge amount of money that was misappropriated into her budget that eventually ended up into her personal pocket. Again, a horror story that you don't want to have happen, but nobody saw it coming. Nobody was monitoring. And if I say it once, I'll say it again. Monitor, monitor, monitor. And as Roxanne said, the Board of Health is ultimately responsible for the finances and the operations of the staff which they've hired. And in this situation, the Board of Health had subcontracted this individual and the money is gone. There is subsequent litigation coming from that. But if you, kind of interesting, if you actually go into the state auditor's website and read some of the reports, it happens on a frequent occurrence through cities, through public entities, through libraries, through other agencies in which someone is responsible for the finances and when they're not watching them, or somebody's siphoning off some money and you think it may not happen to you and you hope it doesn't. But these are what we presented today is just some basics for you to keep in mind and to track and just to double check where your finances are. And like Roxanne said, to keep that transparency between your Board of Health and Board of Supervisors, you'll have a much happier relationship then in the future.
And then we'd love templates. So yes, we will get you templates out to everybody.
So thank you to Burnett and Roxanne for the excellent session. As I mentioned earlier, this is the last of four sessions for this year. If there are any questions after this presentation, please feel free to email them to me at erin-tabor@uiowa.edu, and I will get them to the correct person. Again, thank you so much for joining us this year, and please look out for future communication from me and the Academy in the near future.
Thank you for listening. To learn more about public health and your role as a Board of Health or Board of Supervisor member, please access the remaining podcasts in this series or the recorded webinars. The podcast series, as well as the recorded webinars and other resources, can be found at iowaphla.com. So that's iowaphla.com. Thank you.